I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, two down, four to go. Another common sense initiative appears to have enough signatures to make it through to the legislative session. Meanwhile, Republicans have introduced a bill to protect signature gatherers from harassment and intimidation.
This is not really a Democratic or Republican process that we're trying to protect and respect here.
Plus, Bob Ferguson plays up his chicken checks, and Jonah Goldberg of the Dispatch joins us. Also, come party, except you whiteys. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Whew, it's an exciting time for democracy, don't you think? I can't think of anything more excited than Washingtonians gathering together to push back against policies that simply are not working, but that the party in power refuses to admit are hurting working class people and hurting parents. And that is the subject of the most recent initiative from Let's Go Washington that was turned in yesterday. You might recall, you hopefully recall if you watch the show, Let's Go Washington has been pushing six initiatives, all of them very common sense. They had already turned in previously an initiative to get rid of the Climate Commitment Act, which has sent gas prices skyrocketing. So that was one of six. Now two of six has been turned in. This initiative 2081, they turned in well beyond the necessary number of signatures. No question that it's going to be sent to the legislature. You always send in a few extra signatures just in case there are duplicates or whatever it is, but they were well beyond the number that they needed. As a reminder, Initiative 2081 has to do with parental rights and parental notification. So making sure, first of all, just solidifying that parents are the primary stakeholder in their kids' lives, which I think might come in handy later on when lawmakers try to push policies that try to separate parents from their kids. But it also increases transparency around issues related to education, around the kind of medical care that your kids are receiving. So this one, I was told by Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington, had a tremendous amount of support, perhaps more so in terms of signatures than any other initiative that they're running. All right, so again, that comes after Initiative 2117 was turned in, which would stop the hidden gas tax. So it would repeal the carbon tax, which was a result of the Climate Commitment Act and the carbon auctions that were happening. So we've got Initiative 2117 done. Initiative 2081, done. There's four left, and the question is, can they gather the necessary signatures? I know they're awful close on all of them. Can they gather the necessary signatures before the deadline? They need to have it all in by the end of the year, with time for it to qualify and to be sent to the legislature. So as a reminder, here are the four initiatives that are left. Initiative 2113, which is my personal favorite, which would restore reasonable police pursuits, go back to the pre-2021, mass panic over policing version of our state law that gave police the leeway they needed to make a decision about whether pursuing a vehicle was in the interest of public safety. We also have Initiative 2109 that is still out there. It would repeal what was an illegal tax on capital gains. Washington State is the only state in the country that apparently doesn't think taxing capital gains is taxing income. So this is really about, and you see the left paint this as, oh, this is rich people trying to get off on paying their fair share. We already see the legislature trying to reduce the threshold for who would be subjected to a tax on capital gains. But all that aside, the thing is illegal anyway. They got an ideologically aligned state Supreme Court to hold it up. That's not how our system is supposed to operate. Initiative 2111, they are still collecting signatures for, and that would make sure it would prohibit state, counties, and cities and other local jurisdictions from imposing or collecting income taxes. We have seen the way that lawmakers at all levels in this state have been trying to get around the part of our state constitution that says that if we're going to have an income tax, it has to be flat. Democrats want to find a successful way to get around that, to impose an income tax on you. I-2111 would prohibit them from doing that. And then finally, This one, I've been told by Let's Go Washington, is the one that they're furthest behind on signatures for, which is kind of a surprise to me, because it's a no-brainer. Initiative 2124 would let you opt out of the state's long-term care program. It's like so many of us, including myself, who are paying into that program, are never going to be able to use it. We're never going to be able to use it. People who want to retire out of state, they're not going to benefit from it. People who have their own long-term care, hopefully they, like Nicole, were smart enough to opt out of the state program. And even if you do use the long-term care benefits down the road, it's going to cover just a tiny, teeny, little bitty fraction of what you're going to need for long-term care. So again, two down, four to go. But I'll say, this is exciting stuff, and it's really an unprecedented effort. I mean, hundreds of thousands of Washingtonians signing these initiatives to try to roll back some of the really misguided policies that have been done out there. And that's why it really, it saddens me, I think, to see Democrats, the State Democratic Party, the ACLU, pushing back so hard against these initiative gathering efforts. Because shouldn't they be celebrating this as a wonderful display of democracy in action? Initiatives and referendums, they're part of our wonderful process that allows the citizens, the people, to be able to ultimately have a say in laws that are passed in Olympia. And so I think to see one side, because they don't agree ideologically with the subjects of the initiatives, to see them vilify the effort is really a sad thing. I think you should be celebrating voters participating in the democratic process, whether they're voting for something you like or not like, and we should be able to see this for what it is, which is a really, really unprecedented display of democracy. On that subject, I said on the show yesterday, because it came through as we were doing the show, that two Republican senators in Olympia, Senators Jeff Wilson and Mike Patton, have introduced, thankfully, the first bill that I've seen to try to thwart some of this harassment and intimidation of signature gatherers that we experienced personally over the summer when collecting signatures for Referendum 101, what we're seeing right now with a snitch line that the Democratic Party is pushing out there. So if they find out someone's collecting signatures, they'll send someone out there to harass them or to stand there and try to convince people not to sign, not to come up to the table. So the bill, and I'll read it in its entirety because it's very, very short and to the point, Senate Bill 5820. It says, an act related to establishing protections for citizens participating in the initiative and referendum process. It says, be it enacted, no person may publicly protest another person collecting signatures for or signing any initiative or referendum petition within 25 feet of the person collecting signatures or the person signing or attempting to sign any initiative or referendum petition. So 25 feet, I think it could probably be a little bit more. 25 feet is not very much, but I think this is a good start in finding a way legislatively to protect people's First Amendment rights, to be opposed to an initiative and to protest. I'm a huge fan of the First Amendment, as I hope we all are, but also making sure that as someone is participating in an important aspect of our democracy, they don't feel intimidated and they don't feel harassed. That's not controversial stuff. That's not something that should be the desire of only one political party or one side of the aisle. I mean, that's not asking a lot. Give us a 25-foot buffer so people can make up their minds if they want to sign the thing or not without feeling intimidated out of signing it. And I've used this example before. If we had still in-person polling and you were lining up to vote at your polling location, we would never allow protesters or people standing there as you're going into the polling location at the door telling you not to vote for so-and-so. We would never allow that, ever. So why are we allowing it now when people are exercising a different but important part of the democratic process? That doesn't make any sense to me. So come on, this is common sense stuff. I asked Senator Jeff Wilson, who is one of the sponsors of this bill, to come on the show and talk about it. And yes, that is the Senator Jeff Wilson, who is briefly incarcerated in Hong Kong. So rest assured, I'm going to bring that up with him as well. Senator Jeff Wilson, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you, Brandy, for having me on today.
Well, thank you for doing this bill. I hope it gains some traction. I will be talking to you about your brief stay in Hong Kong, because I can't let it go. I'm very happy to see you in the United States. But let's talk about the bill first. So we've seen, I think, since the summer, some really concerning efforts to intimidate, to harass signature gatherers. Your bill puts a 25-foot buffer. Do you think it's enough?
Well, actually, it's enough for a start. And that's what we need to do as a legislative body, is to look at this problem, to recognize that there's some action that we need to take as elected servants to resolve this issue. And 25 feet, of course, it's negotiable upward. It's a baseline. It's a starting point. And for Senate Bill 5820, this is a bill I'm hoping to move very rapidly on, because it's timely, as you say, Brandy. So 25 feet, we can turn into an auction amount, a good type auction, and raise that number. I would be open to that.
Yeah, I like that you say negotiate upwards. Definitely don't negotiate that number downward. So right now, it's you and your colleague, Senator Patton on the bill, both Republicans. Do you anticipate having Democratic support?
Absolutely. And in fact, when this bill was essentially ready to be dropped, as we call it, I dropped it under an electronic version. A lot of times we do things physically in person with an actual, what we call a pink sheet. In this case, I didn't have any committee meetings that would draw me together with both sides of the aisle for that opportunity. So it's in the electronic portion of our process to gather support for.
Yeah. What do you think would be the reason for any opposition to it?
Well, you know, this is one of those items where you shouldn't have any opposition for it. This is not really a Democratic or Republican process that we're trying to protect and respect here. You might, Brandy, we're talking about the democratic process, where, as you said, to annoy and harass should not interfere with this process. And this is going to be known somewhat as the year of the initiative at the legislature for the short session. So I would think that both sides of the aisle who practice need to preach civility, but to further respect the process of the people. I hope we don't go into $30 car tabs and other things like this, but you know, there's a rich history of the legislature and initiatives.
Yeah, and not just Republican-backed initiatives. You know, there were Democrat-backed initiatives in 2018. I didn't have an opinion show at the time, but if there had been harassment of signature gatherers, I would have hoped it's something everyone was opposed to at the time. So when it comes to, you know, at the core of this challenge for me, and it is challenging, is balancing the First Amendment rights of people to be opposed to the initiatives and to voice that opposition, which I do think is important. It's why I have this job, right? And then the ability of people free from intimidation or the feeling of harassment to consider initiatives. So how do you strike that balance in your mind?
Well, we need to strike that balance. In other words, disagreements or difference of opinions, they do require that basic principle of taking turns. People get to speak, but you speak in turns. You don't overtalk people. You don't interrupt them. You don't shout them down, and you don't bully them, because in fact, that's the preservation of the process I seek, is to take your turn. Everybody gets a platform or an opportunity to exercise that First Amendment. But I think that you strike on a point. When does one person's First Amendment rights, of course, can overtake and, you know, impair somebody else's? And that's a process that does need to be 50-50. So the interference with signature gatherers, in a lot of cases, these are just regular everyday folks. Some of these are paid, some are volunteers, and they're trying to start a discussion of engagement, which is optional. Nobody forces you to stop by and sign a petition. In fact, that's a great chance for the public to get more engaged on political issues. So I just really enjoy that signature gathering theme that says, come get educated, come have a dialogue, but you're going to have to keep it simple, and you do need to take turns.
Yeah, and I love that over the summer, you know, Nicole and I, we volunteered to collect signatures for a referendum, and there'd be people who'd come up and talk to us, and they'd walk away and not sign it after they talked to us. But I appreciated them stopping by to learn a little bit more about what we were doing. So when it comes to Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, who is a Democrat, but I'll give him credit, because when we were experiencing intimidation and harassment over the summer, he spoke out. He used his platform to remind people about what the law is when it comes to these processes. Have you reached out to him about this bill? Do you plan to reach out to him?
Oh, absolutely. The secretary and I have a very good working relationship. In fact, it's the secretary himself that has brought forth to the committee that I serve, state government elections, in the Senate. He's brought forth concerns of harassments and annoyance, especially to such, say, elections people, elections employees, election volunteers, auditor staff. And we're very receptive to that under the overall principle, don't bully people. Don't try to attack. He's been very supportive of that to preserve and protect the process. I can't speak for him specifically on this, Bill, but I do engage with the secretary. He has that big task in front of him to make sure that 324,000 of those signatures on, say, an initiative are, in fact, valid from registered voters. I know that there's an excess of signatures coming, but the Secretary of State, is a large player in timely, as required by a day requirement, timely to accredit these initiatives so it can get that process to the both bodies of the legislature.
Yeah, a lot going on. And you bring up a good point, you know, the harassment of election workers, which has been happening from people on the right. I mean, none of it's time to be adults, you know, to recognize the importance of our democracy, to let other people exercise that. Yeah, we want elections to make sure that they are done rightly and, you know, they're fair and transparent, but we can do it without harassing and intimidating people. Senator Wilson, let me change the subject really quick before I let you go. You had us all worried freaking sick over here. I guess, how are you doing for people who didn't follow the news, which I can't imagine anyone didn't hear? You went on a vacation, landed in Hong Kong, and you had a gun in your carry-on that you turned in. So can you just characterize what you went through?
Well, overall, the end result is I'm overwhelmed with positive support from the community and my constituents. And there have been, of course, some others that have been very critical. But that's being a public servant. That's to be expected. But Brandy, I've been very clear from the beginning that if I've accepted responsibility, I do apologize for any inconvenience I've created or distractionary methods. But the theme of the story here, too, is we never wavered on really what's doing the right thing. I made a mistake. I made a human mistake. I didn't make a Republican or Democrat political mistake. I made a human mistake. And although it was challenging at times, I saw no other course that I had other than to do what I would say the right thing. Once discovered, I immediately sought assistance to remedy that. And I'm pleased to say that's when, in fact, has happened. I didn't say it was an enjoyable experience. It was very unfortunate, obviously unplanned, of course.
Yeah, I mean, we hear all these stories about Americans arrested abroad. Were you scared?
Well, let's just say it's not the way you want to start your vacation. A very what we considered a well-deserved private vacation to go off and to see the world a little bit more. That was not part of the plan. But ultimately, maybe it spurns other conversations, Brandy. And where do we go from here? How do we make it better? Certainly, there's room for improvement. I'm not going to point and be critical, but we can take this as an opportunity to review things. Safety and security does matter.
Yeah.
And also how we handle ourselves. So.
Yeah. And I'll be a devil's advocate. We talk a lot on this show. I defend responsible gun ownership. Republicans talk a lot about that, too. I said it on the show. I cannot imagine having a gun in my carry-on that I did not know about. So can you just characterize how the heck that happened?
Well, we were very short in our ability to get ready to pack. And I mistakenly grabbed a similar briefcase that I used for travel. They're all three identical. There's three, actually. And I grabbed the wrong one. And in the middle of the message of this is, I know it's obvious and I don't want to break it down to that level, but you do need to check your luggage and recheck. I have clearly accepted the responsibility for not checking well enough. And thus I did have that item unloaded in my possession. And again, I'm prepared to work out with any authorities and have done so to cooperate. And the message is, again, it's okay to be human and to err. But really, I think that, integrity and the value of how we operate, because we are elected servants, that's not for consideration. Never at one point would I sacrifice that. And I think that imagine a place where everybody would say, well, I have an issue and I'd like to report that and accept responsibility and work through that. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
But overall, I can't emphasize enough. It is the season to be very happy to be home now, Brandy.
Yeah, I know Mike and I were worried sick about it, and you've just always been so kind to me. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I hope that he doesn't wind up in Hong Kong in a prison. Brittany Griner was flashing through my memory, and Lord knows I felt bad for her too. And so I'm very, very happy to see you home for what was an honest mistake that you tried to rectify pretty quickly. So Senator Jeff Wilson, enjoy, I think, with a renewed sense of gratitude, the holidays, and we'll be tracking this bill.
Thank you, Brandy.
Yeah, I can't imagine that ordeal. And still, it's like, oh gosh, how can you seriously not know that there is a gun in your carry-on? So I'm still just, at the same time, had he not immediately turned it in when he hit the ground in Hong Kong, I would have felt differently about it. But it does seem like it was just a really, really unfortunate, shocking oversight on his part. But back to the bill that we talked about today, I do hope it gets bipartisan support. I made this a subject of our daily subscriber poll today because I want to know if you felt the same way I did about 25 feet. You know, having been out there collecting signatures, 25 feet is not very much. And so I asked, is 25 feet sufficient to protect First Amendment rights while also ensuring signature gatherers and signers are not subjected to harassment and intimidation? And you heard Senator Jeff Wilson say there, well, we can negotiate upward. I think 50 feet is probably a little bit better. Most people on Patreon and Locals are saying the same, that it's not quite sufficient, but it's a good start. Christy said, I think 25 feet is way too generous. The way groups are intimidating and harassing people they don't agree with are really over the top these days. In my opinion, 25 feet is such a short distance and adds ease to further confrontation like physical harassment. I realize altercations happen anyway, but it would be something to help, and I feel like 100 feet is more appropriate. I would pitch in some money to hire bodyguards to protect signature gatherers. Kind of sad we even have to have that conversation, and kind of sad that this bill even needs to exist in the first place. Carrie says, not enough, but it's something. Over on Locals, Matthew Cook says, people can harass and intimidate from 25 feet away. If you want to set up your own info table, go for it. There should be no communication directed at signature gatherers or speech that is meant to intimidate those interested in signing. And I think that's important too, is, you know, you can get on a bullhorn and yell at someone, like when we're collecting signatures for Referendum 101, and we've got 50 protesters standing outside the door to a private business where we're holding this event, and they got signs calling people transphobes, and they're on their loudspeaker. I am sure that there were people who opted not to come in because of that behavior, and we would never allow that kind of behavior outside a polling location. So it shouldn't be allowed in this instance as well. There must be a way to protect First Amendment rights while also preserving our rights to participate in the democratic process. So go ahead and answer that poll question for me if you have not already over on Patreon and Locals, because I want to get your input on what you think. Not only is 25 feet enough, but if you don't think it's enough, what do you think is an appropriate distance or an appropriate remedy to try to balance the two interests at play here? All right, coming up next, Bob Ferguson bragging about his chicken checks. One of our viewers got one and sent us a picture of it. So we'll discuss the reason for the checks and how Bob Ferguson says, man, you ought to be really grateful for them. But first, if you are trying to budget, speaking of chicken checks, if you're trying to budget, given all the pressures that are on us right now, inflation, the cost of gas, maybe you want to take a second look at the insurance that your family has. Is it time to maybe get better insurance? Is it time to get more affordable insurance? Mike and I took the FirstMark challenge back in the spring. I've been hearing about it on the radio for years. We knew we were underinsured, but going through that process, we got better insurance for the same price, which was a no-brainer, a total win for us. I've heard from some of you who've taken the FirstMark challenge, you're saving $100 a month, $200 a month. You did not have to sacrifice any sort of quality of insurance in the process. And the best part is, FirstMark does this for you for free. Dave Taylor is the CEO of FirstMark. He says, yes, the affordability of your insurance matters, but there's also other factors at play.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage, it's having the right coverage at a competitive rate, and it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, 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 right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't, okay? No. Yeah, you can't do it in 15 minutes or less, but the product is superior. It's a local company. They're doing all the hard work for you of shopping around at the major carriers to see who can get you the best insurance for the best price. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. Sign up for the FirstMark Challenge. today. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they have your best interests in mind. All right, Bob Ferguson wants you to know that he is looking out for your pocketbook and he's sending you some chicken checks to prove it. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, what do I mean by chicken checks? So Washington State and Attorney General Bob Ferguson, they were part of a lawsuit against some tuna and chicken producers for price fixing conspiracies that they say cost Washingtonians millions of dollars. So they ended up getting $40.6 million that they are now going to send back out to some Washingtonians in the form of a little check from the office of Attorney General Bob Ferguson. I'll tell you who qualifies for the checks momentarily, but this is how Bob Ferguson talked about it on his campaign. This is important. This is what he posted on his campaign Twitter, not his official Attorney General Twitter. So to think that Bob Ferguson is not going to take advantage of the fact that he is his office personally sending out checks to Washingtonians while he's also running for governor, of course he's got to take advantage of that. He says, 1 in 6 Washingtonians lives in a household that will receive a check. In all, my office has put $270 million back in Washingtonians' pockets, not to mention the hundreds of millions we've won in debt relief. Happy holidays. I hope the money makes a difference. Which is so tone deaf because some of these checks are like $50. I want you to know. He says, grocery budgets only stretch so far, especially these days. No mention of why? No? You don't want to talk about why our grocery budget isn't going as far? He says, it's unconscionable that companies would illegally conspire to raise prices even more. Today, we're taking money from companies that cheated hardworking Washingtonians and returning it to those they cheated. Man, I can think of another person who's cheating hardworking Washingtonians. Oh, Jay Inslee. I wonder if you're going to return some of the gas money that people have had to cough up because of the Climate Commitment Act. But I digress. So if you haven't received one of these chicken checks yet, you might not because it's going to be people who have a household income that is 175% of the federal poverty line and below. So some examples of that. If you've got a family of five with a household income less than $61,000. If you're a single parent raising three kids on an income of $52,000 or less. If you're a single parent with two children making less than $43,000. If you're a single parent of one child or a retired couple living on two fixed incomes that total less than $34,000. Or if you're a retired individual who lives alone on a fixed income less than $25,000 a year. So single-person households, you're going to get a check for $50. Multi-person households, you're going to get a check for $120. Now, what do these checks look like? So you're going to get, the envelope is going to be from attorney, it's going to say Bob Ferguson, Attorney General, on the envelope. You're going to get an old letter from Bob himself, and the check itself is going to say Bob Ferguson, Attorney General of Washington. And then it's going to have the amount that you're getting on it. This was sent to us by a viewer who said that, and this is the funny part, we've blacked out the name, obviously, but she got it, well, her dad got it, right, Nicole, because you communicated with her.
Right, so it was addressed to her dad with her sister's middle name, and it was to her address. So yeah. Her dad doesn't live with her. Her sister is not part of this, and
so it's like
it came to her.
I don't even know if they can cash this check, but the letter that comes with it says, good news, you're receiving a refund. Dear so-and-so, as Attorney General, one of my top priorities is protecting consumers from fraud and deception. When corporations do not play by the rules, my team and I take action. My office filed lawsuits against more than 20 corporations that make and sell chicken and canned tuna because they secretly agreed to raise prices for these products. Their motive was simple, greed. Their actions violated state and federal laws that encourage competition in the marketplace and help keep prices down for consumers. As a result of their illegal activity, you paid more than you should have for chicken and canned tuna. Hardworking Washingtonians cannot afford to be cheated by large corporations. Most of our lawsuits are now resolved, and these corporations must pay my office over $40 million. I am returning this money to Washingtonians like you who were most harmed by their illegal conduct. And again, he's currently running for governor. Now look, I agree that if there's clear-cut examples of price fixing, I'm not taking issue with his office going after this money. I'm not even taking office or issue with his office returning the money. Although I'll say there is no burden of proof here that you bought the chicken in question, that you bought the canned tuna in question. It's basically saying, and I don't know how they would do that. That would sound like a mess. So they're just like, okay, let's give it to the poorest Washingtonian. So that's just, I want you to know that it's not like you had to send in a receipt saying, hey, I bought some chicken or canned tuna or whatever it is. Now, one of the things that really grinds my gears about this is how much Democrats lost their ever-loving minds when Trump did something just like this with stimulus checks. Do you remember the headlines? Because the stimulus checks were going to have Trump's name on it, and he sent a letter, and they were going to come in an envelope from the president. Some of the headlines: in unprecedented move, Treasury orders Trump's names printed on stimulus checks. Getting a stimulus check, Trump's name will be on it. Stimulus checks to bear Trump's name, an unprecedented move. How did Trump's name end up on coronavirus relief checks in 2020? ABC News successfully sued to find out. I mean, ABC sued about it. It's crazy. Trump wants his name on millions of stimulus checks, even if it delays them. Now, look, I don't know what Trump's motivation was either. I mean, I don't know if it certainly didn't seem like Trump's name had to be on the checks. Do I think that he wanted Americans to know, hey, I'm the president and this looks really good for me while I'm running for re-election, that you've got the... of course I think that. And I also think it with Attorney General Bob Ferguson. I think, you know, Trump did it when he was going to run for re-election. Bob Ferguson does it when he's running for governor, and conveniently leaves out all the other ways that his office has screwed Washingtonians out of money by pursuing fruitless, politically motivated legal action, by hiding documentation during court proceedings where his office then had to pay fines. Like, let's conveniently leave all of that out. And let me write a big old letter and send a check to people talking about how great I am and how I work. I look out for hardworking Washingtonians. Well, my friend, Governor Jay Inslee, who's endorsed my campaigns, doesn't care at all about hardworking Washingtonians and won't even admit that his own policies have raised prices at the gas pump. So, I mean, I digress. No moral consistency. No moral consistency. Now, Shift Washington, which is sort of like a center-right entity, called out Bob Ferguson for some of this on Twitter. I was actually surprised he responds. He never responds to criticism. They said, hey, Bob Ferguson, be transparent. Tally up the numbers of all the state's losses under your partisan attack approach, starting with the Value Village debacle. Or maybe some reporter could add that up for the AG, since sixth grade math eludes Washington, allegedly, referring to the fact that sixth grade math shows us that, of course, the carbon tax was going to increase gas prices. But you still see this Inslee administration and his political allies denying that. But he was referring to Value Village, which was a crazy case that Washington State lost, had to pay Value Village a bunch of money because Bob Ferguson went after them without following his offices and the laws and the protocols in place for going after a nonprofit that they think is skirting the rules. So wasted a bunch of money, wasted a bunch of time. Bob Ferguson responds, sure, Value Village is my only unsuccessful consumer protection case as attorney general. We were generally successful at the trial court, but lost at the Supreme Court. I reimbursed Value Village's costs and fees from proceeds from legal victories, not taxpayer funds.
Wait a minute.
Bob Ferguson, every dime your office makes is taxpayer funds. Every single dime your office gets from legal victories then becomes a taxpayer fund. Do you think it becomes your personal money? Your personal slush fund?
It sure.
You're an elected official.
Yeah, it sounds like that in the letter as well, because right. It says, my office is giving this back. He takes it as he's getting paid in these lawsuits. It's his.
Yeah, that's insane. I reimbursed Value Village's costs and fees from proceeds from legal victories. You didn't reimburse Jack. Yeah. You gave them our money. If that's lost on you, you are not fit to be governor. Not taxpayer funds. Every dime, I just have to reiterate it, no matter where that money comes from, any dime that hits your office is our money. It is not your money. Absolutely unbelievable. You know, I've bought a lot of chicken. I would like a chicken check. I would like a chicken
one.
Check. Thank you.
That's the thing, is he says he's giving it back to people who deserve it. No. The people who deserve it are the people who spent the money on the chicken or the tuna.
Regardless of, and I do agree with that. Be fair, I don't know how you would even do that. And what would happen is if you required people to, I don't know, provide receipts showing they bought chicken or tuna during a certain time frame, which is the only way to do it correctly,
right.
It's unfeasible. But also what that would result in is very few people would be able to provide evidence, and then his office would keep the money, and then it would get squandered entirely. So I'd rather that money be sent to impoverished Washingtonians and elderly people on a fixed income than Bob Ferguson's office keep one cent of it to squander on him going after his political enemies.
I agree, but I think it's all a big show. This is settled a while ago, too. We don't know how this works. I'm not being accusatory about anything, but this is very convenient timing for these checks to go out right now, and this was settled a while ago. Mm. So
big old spiel. And again, it was totally when Trump did it, totally, so he could get points from people. And that's exactly what's happening right now.
That word came up quite often.
Ah, interesting that all the media shame Trump for his sending out the stimulus checks with his name printed on it, that they wouldn't, where are the articles about Bob?
Yeah, I thought he was representing us, but he won it for him. And now he's giving money back.
I reimbursed costs and fees from proceeds from legal victories, not taxpayer funds. Oh, so you wrote a personal check from your bank account? Unbelievable. Who writes this stuff? Probably good that he doesn't respond to criticism, because he's apparently not very good at it. All right, if you are speaking of screwing working class Washingtonians, if you're a mom or pop landlord, which I've been told is racist and homophobic, right? To use the phrase mom or pop landlord. I don't know. That's what Publicola says. I'm going to use it anyway. If you're a small landlord in Seattle or Tacoma, man, the struggle is real right now. You have these tenant protections that have just gone well beyond the point of being reasonable. We don't know for sure yet what the impact is going to be in Tacoma, because voters just passed Measure 1 there that puts these strict protections in place. But Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com, not only is he a real estate agent, he also is a small landlord in the city of Tacoma. And like a lot of landlords down there, he's trying to decide, do I sell the units that I have?
We continue to see more and more aggressive landlord-tenant laws being passed in favor of the tenant rights. Like, you go down to Tacoma, we are practically back at those, you know, COVID anti-eviction restrictions with what they have passed down there, if you really want to jump through the hoops and work the system. Except what's not available right now is the help for landlords should one of those people choose not to pay. And I'm saying choose not to pay, because there are plenty of people who are choosing not to pay. It's not that they can't, they choose not to.
Yeah. So if you are a landlord who, because of some of these policies, is considering selling the units that you have, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Not only could he help you with that, if that's the route you decide to go, but you can also commiserate about some of the experiences that you're going to have in common. Unfortunately, we laugh so we don't cry, given the state of things. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Before we get on to our, which was a really fun interview with Jonah Goldberg of The Dispatch, you know what I'm mad about, Nicole? Not one person.
What? I know.
Not one of you. Not one.
She was so sure you would notice.
A single one of you has mentioned that I put up Christmas decorations. I worked really hard on it. They've been falling down left and right. I'm sure one will fall down today. Very hard to get up. Not one of you. You guys notice everything.
I'm looking to make sure, but...
You notice everything. Not one person noticed that in an attempt to bring you holiday cheer, you didn't even notice that I put up Christmas decor. I'm actually genuinely hurt by that. I'm taking it down. After the show today, I'm taking it down. No Christmas cheer for you.
Not allowed.
All right. We've been talking about... So one of the goals on this show, and you're going to see it even more in the new year, is to try to obviously not only give you a resource to get news that isn't totally in these political silos, but to lift up other entities that are doing the same thing. Because I think if we can lift them up, and then we've got this whole universe out there of common sense news sources, that's why we play a lot of Jonathan Cho's work. That's why we talk about the Center Square quite a bit. People who are doing what they should be doing. And look, we have an opinion, but I hope that you still find yourself informed based on facts about the issues at play. And so the Dispatch, that's why we've been talking about this event that the Dispatch is having in Bellevue tomorrow. I'm also going to be there. So selfishly, I'd like to see you there as well. It's going to be a meet and greet with Jonah Goldberg and Kevin Williamson of The Dispatch. We had Kevin Williamson on the show yesterday. And today, this morning, I got a chance to chat with Jonah Goldberg, who's just such a nice guy. I hadn't had a chance to talk to him before. I've, of course, read his work. But we talked a little bit about why people might be interested in reading The Dispatch, what their mission is, and then about some of what's happening nationally with this insane spike in anti-Semitism on the left. Jonah Goldberg, welcome to Undivided.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to report that we've had a monsoon for 2 weeks and the skies have suddenly cleared. So just in time for your arrival, we might get some nice weather.
That would be great. I actually go to Washington State quite a bit. I was married in the San Juan Islands. Two of my wife's sisters lived up there. And so I've been to Seattle a bunch. Washington State is one of my favorite places. I will say that it seems like Seattle's had a hard time since the pandemic, but that's probably a conversation for another time.
Yeah, maybe. Hard time since the pandemic, even before the pandemic a little bit. It's been a little rough, but the beauty of the state remains intact. It's just
covered. I agree. My point is it kind of accelerated some of the problems like that were already existing there, but I'm still a huge fan of the state and of Seattle.
So yeah, there's a lot to love about it. So you guys will be here on Thursday. For folks who have not subscribed to the Dispatch or haven't read your content, what kind of news consumer do you think it appeals to?
So Steve Hayes and I, we started the Dispatch 4 or 5 years ago now. Time is a flat circle. I was at National Review for 21 years. Still love National Review. A lot of good friends from there. Steve was the editor of the Weekly Standard. We were both Fox News guys for a very long time. We're both still very conservative, or we're both conservative, depending what very counts for these days is a little unclear. But we kind of lost the appetite for carrying water for any political party. And so we wanted to do was sort of start an institution that modeled the kind of journalism that we thought was lacking. And I don't mean this as a way to criticize any specific outlet or anything like that. But we want to be sort of facts first. When the Republican Party is right, happy to say the Republican Party is right. When the Democratic Party is not as wrong as some people want it to be, happy to say that too. We want to sort of stick to the truth, stick to the facts, and not get caught up in the sort of inside the beltway cable news. My team has to win, your team has to lose, partisan point scoring kind of thing. And so we do a lot of political coverage from a center-right perspective, but we're not caught up in the day-to-day kind of silly food fight stuff. And our biggest priority is not wasting people's time. So we're for smart people, educated people who want to follow the news, but also don't want to obsess about it like it's some sort of soap opera. And that's sort of our core audience.
Yeah, I think that's a really good characterization of what I get from the Dispatch. And it is a little bit more intellectual. I don't feel like I'm wasting my time. And for the reasons, you know, I'm very opposed to both the parties. I think they've absolutely gone off the rails. And so I think there's that element. You know, we had Kevin Williamson on the show yesterday. And he and I talked a lot about sort of his dislike for some aspects of the Republican Party and of modern day conservatism. But since you do cater I don't want to say cater, but since you do, I think, appeal to a center-right audience, how do you, because your work is the same, if you look at some of your recent stories, you know, you have criticism of Republicans, you have criticism of Democrats. Do you ever get it from your readers that they're like, hey, well, what, you're focusing too much on Republicans. What about all the crazy stuff Democrats are doing?
Sure. No, we get that all the time. And I will say I criticize Democrats quite often. I will say that, you know, one of the sort of really satisfying things is I would say a good chunk of our readership are actually sort of center left people in the sense that they're liberals, but not leftists, but they're sort of open. They want to know what the smart nonpartisan conservative argument is for certain things. Right. And so this is one of the weird things about the times we're in. I can have a more civilized, serious disagreement and conversation and actually sometimes have more in common with someone who's on the center left, but is sort of a traditional free speech liberal, thinks science and facts matter, than I can with some of the sort of the ultra nationalist kind of ultra Trumpist kind of people who just have this sort of tribal connection to their politics. We're trying to appeal to anti-tribalists in all parties. But sure, I get it. You know, I'm a passionate both sideser. And what I mean by that is like, first of all, A lot of the problems we have in our politics have to do with the fact that the party system as it's currently constructed is just a hot mess.
Yeah.
And so the progressives are going to have problems that stem from the fact that party system is messed up for them, right? Basically, I believe that the parties are too weak, not too strong, and that because they're so weak, they can't impose discipline. They can't get their members to sort of compromise on important issues, that there's a real penalty for trying to work with somebody across the aisle. Like the surest way to lose a primary as a Democrat or a Republican is say, I'll be working with people across the aisle to get the important things done. You have to say, I'm gonna rip off their heads and drink from their skulls. And that's what gets you to win a primary. I think that's dysfunctional. I think that's no way to run a railroad. And so people get really mad at me when I sort of do this both sides stuff. But the simple fact is the Republican Party has got deep and serious problems. And the Democratic Party has deep and serious problems. But because they're different parties with different coalitions, they manifest themselves differently. And, you know, so I'll often say is like, yeah, there's an anti-Semitism problem on the right for sure. And I've been fighting it for 20 years. There's also an anti-Semitism problem on the left. They manifest themselves differently, but they also, and they're about a different set of issues. But it's also because the left controls a lot of the commanding heights of the culture. They control universities far more than conservatives do, Hollywood, journalism, that kind of thing. The way you deal with sort of the anti-Semitism problem on the left is going to be different than the way you deal with the anti-Semitism problem on the right. Same sort of basic problem, but the way it manifests itself, the way it expresses itself is going to be different. And so there's sort of different arguments and different criticisms that are required.
You mentioned, you know, sort of the way that the left controls some of these, you know, very forward facing aspects of what we're seeing play out right now. I mean, have you been surprised, even though you've known it existed, how quickly that anti-Semitism from the far left has reared its head and how kind of prolific it has been?
Yeah, so I go back and forth about this. I get asked this a lot. And on one level, very surprised in the sense that, you know, the immediate criticism of, first of all, obviously Israel, but then pro-Israel people, then just Jews in general on campuses and whatnot. It would be one thing if on October 7th, Israel had launched a surprise attack on Gaza, right? I mean, I'm not saying I would forgive harassing Jews on Harvard campus because of what Israel did, but I would understand it more. But the response was to Hamas launching these murderous terrorist raids where they raped people, they killed kids in front of their parents and parents in front of their kids. And the immediate anger was at Jews for taking offense at this. That surprised me. Like just morally, I think that's all kinds of screwed up, right? On the other hand, for most of my career, you know, at National Review, most of the anti-Semitism I got was from the left until about 2015, 2016, when all of a sudden it started coming from the right. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, this feels like in a little way more natural to me. And also, I do think the anti-Semitism that we see all over the place, it is in many ways a sort of logical extension of some of the crazier sort of oppressor narrative, colonial settler stuff that they teach at a lot of these schools. But it just the inhumanity of it still shocks me. The fact that people would proudly take down wanted, you know, missing posters for babies, like. I get wanting to hear both sides or talk about how, you know, Israel's not blameless or whatever. I get criticisms of Israel. That's fine. But sort of celebrating and apologizing for the kind of heinous barbarity that we saw in 10/7. Forget the anti-Semitism. I just don't get the inhumanity of it.
Yeah. You touched on something that I wanted to ask you about and that I'm sure you're going to be asked about when you're here on Thursday. You know, I've been a journalist in Seattle for 15 years and I've been waiting for reasonable Democrats to wake up to some of the insane stuff that's been happening on the far left in Seattle. And you mentioned this oppressor versus oppressed narrative that's just been building. I talked about it on the show the other day with Congressman Adam Smith, a Democrat, reasonable, nice guy, House Armed Services Committee. And I wonder, there's this little piece of me that wants to hope that maybe this is the turning point, that now they've taken it too far. Do you get that sense?
I think yes, at the margins, right? I mean, like, certainly there are a bunch of, you know, my natural people. I grew up on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. There are a lot of like liberal Jews who are like, whoa, I thought we were on the same team here, you know, and that's going to take time to work its way through the system. You have a lot of people on Wall Street who are like, and in the legal community who are like, wait a second, we got to draw a bright line here. And that kind of stuff is important and relevant. At the national political level, I don't know. I mean, I just don't know. And this gets to my both sides stuff, right? Is like, basically, I think both parties have forgotten how to be majority parties. They are so addicted to the 20% of the crazies in their base who define the narrative and all that kind of stuff that they've lost sight of the fact that whichever party just decides not to be crazy could be the majority party. And they keep competing with each other to do dumbass things. And so right now it's the Democrats' term to deal with the problems that they created and they've tolerated in their midst. But that the baton will be passed back to the Republicans any day now, if it hasn't since this morning, because I haven't followed the news.
Yeah. I mean, there's a part of me that's happy about that, though. There's a part of me that's happy about, you know, this, the crazies in the party, you know, them catering to, you know, this 20% on one side, 20% on the other, because like you, I don't like either of the political parties in their current form very much. And I feel like maybe it will help grow this segment of America that's committed to not looking at things in such a tribalistic way, like the people who read the Dispatch.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I mean, I think a lot of the rhetoric you hear from people on the far left, on the far right, to the extent these terms mean something recognizable these days, when you hear them say, oh, there's not a dime's worth of difference between these parties, I think on most issues, that's actually not true. You just look at like a lot of important issues, abortion, taxes. You can go down a list. There are big differences between the parties. There may not be big differences between the 60% in the middle, but there are big differences between the groups that have captured the parties. The one place where I think there is a uniparty, as you hear a lot of people like use that phrase, is on the control that these parties have of the election systems in their states. It's not rigged in the sort of Trumpian sense or any of that kind of stuff. It's just literally, it's written into the law that these parties, it's very difficult to successfully run a third party in any of these states. And that doesn't mean, I do think that both of these parties are in trouble. They're very rigid. They're like marble. Marble's really strong, but it's also very brittle and it can break really quickly. And we know from the social science data that most of the most ardent partisans actually hate their own parties. The people who really show up in the primaries, they're voting against the other party more than they're voting for their party, because they believe that these establishment guys in the Democrats or in the Republicans have sold them out. And so you could see how in an era of negative partisanship, if one party dies, the other party loses its reason to live. And you can see a real change in the coalitions that make up, they may still be called Republican and Democrat, but who's a member of what party? Like what are the natural considerations? Like you could see, because of the Israel stuff, a lot of Jews moving into the Republican Party for the foreseeable future. We've already seen a lot of the white working class and now parts of the Hispanic and African-American working class moving into the Republican Party. College educated married couples in the suburbs were once the staple of the Republican Party. And I think the Republican Party made a huge mistake throwing them all away. But now they've moved big into the Democratic Party. So we're seeing a lot of movement, which explains some of the ways in which like a lot of Republicans are no longer free market people. And a lot of Democrats are like saying, whoa, 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 some of this, you know, DEI stuff is getting out of hand.
Yeah. If one party dies, the other party loses its reason to live. Jonah, that's some deep stuff right there. That's some deep stuff. Jonah Goldberg, you will be with Kevin Williamson at the Hyatt Regency Bellevue this Thursday, tomorrow, 6 p.m. Make your final pitch for people to come.
Oh, it'll be a good time. We're going to take as many questions from the audience as we can. Kevin, he's grumpy, but he's a brilliant dude. And we're going to do a lot of deep cuts on philosophy, but also a lot of rank punditry. And if you feel like you've been taking crazy pills the last few years, regardless of the party that you're in, the Dispatch is the place for you.
Yeah. No one warned me that Kevin was grumpy before he came on. I thought, is it me?
He's grumpy.
All right, Jonah Goldberg. Well, I will see you on Thursday. Really looking forward to it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much.
And I did post a link in the comments from today's live show, regardless of where you're watching, where you can register for that event and you get to hang out and see me. So why would you not come, right? God, I'm humble. just so humble. Okay, before we get to Hunter Biden taking a page out of his dad's playbook and going on a rant about MAGA Republicans, but also interesting because we haven't heard him really speak out in this way about some of the focus on him, his father's business dealings, his substance abuse, all the times he's just blatantly broken the law on videos that he took himself. So we'll get to that clip coming up next. But first, if you're concerned about the economy, I think there is a lot of reasons stacking up to be concerned about the economy. And we've been having Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital on the show every week to talk about how critical it is to manage your risk before it's too late. That's what he and his team specialize in at Bulwark Capital. That's what he talks about on his show, weekly radio show, knowyourriskradio.com. One of the more recent, I guess, dominoes that's been stacking up is this prediction that the commercial real estate market is going to go through a bubble burst for a variety of reasons. But, you know, we have a lot of empty office space here too in Washington State. And so we're certainly going to see it as well. And as Zach said, that in and of itself wouldn't be enough to indicate some sort of big economic downturn in 2024. But as one of many dominoes, it is.
You know, that's one of the reasons that we're just kind of looking at this market and looking at all these people talking about a great economy. And it's not that it's so bad, but there's just so many structural issues coming to a head at one time. And the market is clearly not paying attention. Mainstream media is clearly not paying attention. And I think it's kind of part and partial to us as a culture now. Why does everybody feel confident about the economy? There's one reason. It's the stock market. And that's all anybody's looking at, right? And you're just like, okay, well, just so you guys know, the prices you're seeing in the stock market are ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, and so if you're looking at just the stock market, you might be caught flat-footed when eventually all of what's happening in our economy, all the money that we dumped in, the printed checks we talked about earlier with stimulus funds, people racking up credit card debt and then not being able to pay it off, commercial real estate market, all of that. Hopefully it doesn't happen. But if it comes to fruition in 2024, you want to make sure you've managed your risk in that retirement that you've worked so hard for. So check out Zach's weekly radio show because he gives great advice to be prepared. KnowYourRiskRadio.com, KnowYourRiskRadio.com. While you're there, you can learn more about Bulwark Capital Management's risk management strategy. All right, Hunter Biden says MAGA Republicans are being mean to him. Hunter Biden, man. It was interesting. Nicole was going through this audio. You tell me after I play the clip whether you think Hunter Biden sounds just like Joe Biden, because I think their voice is very similar. But that aside, so Hunter Biden has defied a House subpoena. You have Republicans in the House who have wanted to have him come in and testify to them about his family's overseas business dealings. So rather than go into this closed door session, Hunter Biden shows up on Capitol Hill to do a press conference saying, if they want to talk to me, it can be an open door meeting rather than a closed door meeting. And he goes on a rant about what Republicans are doing to him.
There is no fairness or decency in what these Republicans are doing. They have lied over and over about every aspect of my personal and professional life. So much so that their lies have become the false facts believed by too many people. No matter how many times it is debunked, they continue to insist that my father's support of Ukraine against Russia is the result of a non-existent bribe. They displayed naked photos of me during an oversight hearing. And they have taken the light of my dad's love, the light of my dad's love for me, and presented it as darkness. They have no shame.
Okay. I have a few thoughts on this. I do understand sort of one of the arguments when it comes to Hunter Biden that his drug use, and which I think we should take seriously, has been sort of, rather than maybe the care and concern that Democrats or that people might give to it for other people, he hasn't been given the same care and concern about having a substance abuse disorder. That being said, I mean, this is the president's son. This is someone who has done business, who has business, verified business connections with his father that are worthy of looking into. And this is someone who has posted these videos or taken these videos and these pictures of him engaged in illegal activity while Democrats act like drug use is not a big deal for anyone else. I mean, this is a guy who has taken videos of himself weighing out his crack This is a guy who has taken videos of himself going, you know, at lightning speed down a freeway, putting lives in danger, high out of his mind. Do you think Democrats would really ignore that if that were, you know, Trump Jr.? No, they wouldn't have. And so there is a little tit for tat. But the guy has also, unfortunately for him, documented some of his criminal conduct publicly. And, you know, the fact that he has or has had a substance abuse disorder does not negate some of the issues that I think are worthy of consideration about how he tried to use his father and his father's power and his father's position and how that might have put the United States at risk. So, you know, Republicans, I do think there are some of them who, you know, they want to use Hunter to kind of get back at Democrats for what Democrats did to Donald Trump. And it's this just annoying, really, set of circumstances around, you know, the same old money families, the same, you know, last name and all this stuff that just complicates our political system. And it's like, can't we just have someone normal? Can't we just have a president who's normal without the baggage, without the family baggage, without the personal baggage, without these old politics names, old money names that lead to all of this? It's all a disaster. I think that there are more important things to focus on. I think there are more important things to focus on than endless investigations into Donald Trump as well. There are some aspects of what Hunter has allegedly done that are absolutely worthy of getting to the bottom of as long as his father is president of the United States. But for him to sit out there and cry as if there's no good reason to be looking at his conduct is utterly ridiculous. All right. The mayor of Boston would like to invite you to a Christmas party. As long as you're not white, this is insane. So the mayor of Boston, Mayor Michelle Wu, had a staff member send out an email that was only supposed to go to people of color. Ended up finding
elected
its way.
Officials
elected officials.
Of color.
Ended up finding its way, unfortunately, to whiteies. Mm-hmm. You know, and they found out about it. They're like, this is crazy. It says, honorable members, on behalf of Mayor Michelle Wu, I cordially invite you and a guest to the Electeds of Color holiday party on Wednesday, December 13th at 5:30 p.m., which should be starting an hour from now if it's still happening. I imagine they might have canceled it. Please let me know if you plan to attend and have any dietary restrictions. I'm sure there are some people who plan to attend and said, I don't have dietary restrictions, but I am white. Is that a restriction? This is just racist. And again, it goes to this sort of anti-racist mentality. If you had a white mayor who sent out an email saying, we cordially invite you to be our guest to a white elected's holiday party, and they tried to do it in secrecy. The goal here was for white people, white elected leaders of color, not to find out about this. Can you imagine if white elected leaders had a holiday party in secrecy, or a holiday party not in secrecy for that matter? It would be all over every single news station, news entity in the country for weeks and weeks on end, and people would be forced to resign over it. But when you do it, when it's the opposite, it's totally fine. That's craziness. That is insane. All right, before we get to your questions and comments, and we've been called out by some people who say that they noticed our Christmas decorations and they said something and provided screenshots. So we apparently missed your comments. I apologize. We'll get to that coming up. But first, it is a new year soon. New year, new you. I have done 1,000,001 New Year's resolutions to lose weight, and every single one of them has failed because I took something that I needed to do for myself and I made it about attaching it to a holiday and a new year, which is never going to work. I mean, there's no perfect time to start on a new health and wellness journey. So that's what I found has been effective for me with the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I started it November 1st of last year. I did that freaking program through the holidays. And you know what? I lost almost 30 pounds in 2 months. Through Thanksgiving, through Christmas, through events and gathering. And that's what really taught me that it was going to work in the long run. If I could do it during the holidays, I could make it happen at any time. So if you've been looking for really a weight loss program that isn't a diet, that is going to change your habits long term, give you tools you need to keep that excess weight off, I'm telling you, give the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program a try. Start with a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. You can do it virtually. You can do the whole program virtually, by the way, if you want. No matter where you live, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right, we'll just start with that. Matt, he screenshotted his comment saying Christmas decorations, and he called us out for telling lies.
All right.
I'll keep the Christmas decorations up. I was a little triggered, okay? I was really excited about him, and then I get nothing from you guys, but apparently I just missed it. I was just, you know, so wrapped up in my angst this week. Y says, aw, sorry, I did notice the decoration yesterday, but I didn't comment. No, leave them up. Okay, I was being a little angry. I won't take them down. Sorry, I lashed out a little bit. I apologize.
Looking for compliments.
Yeah, always searching for compliments, just so desperate. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures. Brandy and Nicole, do you have any family traditions for our holiday season? I'm truly curious. We do. And I'm so excited because I'm going to be home with Miranda since she went through a near-death experience, has demanded all the kids be home, all the siblings. So I'm going to be back for Christmas. And we do this fun thing every year. And sometimes not everyone is there, which makes it less fun. Mm-hmm. But we build we have a gingerbread house building contest where everybody's teamed up. And then my little brother is always the judge. And he goes at it, and he wants to not only
participate then?
He doesn't participate. He's the judge. Okay. He goes in to make sure not only are they physically, aesthetically pleasing, but they're strong. And he does this funny thing where I know it's hard to even describe it. Maybe I'll take a video when we do it. He screams at them. That's one of his tests. He's sort of banging on the table. Then he's screaming at them to make sure they don't just fall over.
The sound waves make them fall. Yes.
But oh my gosh, we laugh and laugh and laugh over it. And it's just so much fun. Usually mine is the best decorated. I know that doesn't come as a surprise to anyone. But it's just.
But not always the most structurally sound. Is that what you're saying?
I think it's structurally sound. There have been some years I've lost because of what I consider bias judging. Yeah. But I'll have to send you guys a video because that's when we do. Nicole?
Yeah, I hope so.
We're going overtime today.
Traditions, well, I mean, as far as the actual holiday, so we always do kind of a – when I was young, we would do one grandparent's house on Christmas Eve and then drive from Bellevue back up to Blaine in the middle of the night, and then Santa would come and all of that. So since those traditions have kind of changed a little bit, now we go to my sister-in-law and brother's house and we do Christmas, like, Eve and games and – food and all of that with my brother and sister-in-law's family. I'm the only child that's single, you know, so I just float around to the different houses. And then we go back to my parents' house. I spend the night with them, and then my brothers all bring their families over on Christmas morning, and we kind of do that thing. So, everybody kind of goes and does whatever they want on Thanksgiving because my mom has really – you know, owned Christmas. And so everybody goes and does their own thing. And then my mom's whole side of the family, aunts, uncles, all of that come to my mom's on Christmas.
You got to have those traditions. It's something to look forward to. All right, Denise Young, $10 for Nicole's Fringe Benefit Fund. I think that's what we were talking about yesterday, how you want a job that has some good benefits. Oh, yeah. So then it's going to be your Fringe Benefit Fund. So I have to give that $10 to Nicole. I'll add it to your next paycheck.
Deal. It's always been my thing, though. My first job was working for Alaska Airlines so I could fly.
Yeah. See, that's nice. You're getting something extra out of it.
Yeah.
Deanne Sanderson, I signed all six initiatives and collected signatures for a couple weeks. I don't understand why anyone would be opposed to any of these items going on a ballot for voters to decide. Again, it's not as if the initiative process lets a minority of Washingtonians change the law. No. A minority of Washingtonians that can sign it, that send it to voters, but it still has to be passed by voters. On Bob Ferguson's Chicken Checks, Brett Hammond says, Washington's flag should say, proudly using tax dollars to sue taxpayers over tax dollars. Good times. Carla Griffin, it might do more good to donate to the money to state food banks.
I actually think that's a pretty good idea. If she would have, if he would have just done that, then it would have saved a lot of administration fees that I'm sure are not coming out of that money.
Yeah, but then he couldn't send out letters to people. That's actually a really good idea.
It's a really good idea.
Man, you should be in charge of these things. All right, Julie Ferguson sued with our taxpayer money, then used the winnings for his campaign to try to win votes, similar to how they pay homeless for their votes. All right, I think that's all the questions and comments we have time for today. Let's get to our closing sanity check. Sorry, I went mind blank there for a second. I went totally mind blank. So remember, we're having this conversation about the Harvard president, Claudine Gay, and how she's been accused of plagiarism. So obviously she went before Congress, made a fool out of herself by making excuses for anti-Semitism. And then after she was already under scrutiny for that, then there's all this news that she has this history of plagiarism, yet she still gets to keep her job. And so now there's this story, and this is from Campus Reform. And I don't know if this is an effort to try to just make it okay that the Harvard president, since she's Black, plagiarized. But a University of Cincinnati professor is arguing that enforcing rules around plagiarism harms Black and Latinx students. It says, on the issue of technology, the professor claims that proctoring software built to monitor students during remote exams perpetuates racial biases and stereotypes. Then, on the issue of zero tolerance for plagiarism, the professor writes that policies against plagiarism and standards of academic integrity, quote, disproportionately harm Black and Latinx students. Finally, and I'm saying the professor because I can't say their last name. That's way too long, and I'm not even going to try. Finally, the professor tells readers to consider how white students have historically had access to exclusive academic resources through their sororities and fraternities. So sororities and fraternities are now racist. Referring to test banks, which are cheat sheets for exams made by fraternities and sororities, as an exclusive academic resource. The Cincinnati professor said that white students take exams and do homework with unfair advantages and claims that white students cheat regularly. So wait a second. So you're making a claim that white students cheat regularly. And so rather than try to crack down on this cheating, that you're just making a blanket statement for white students who are in sororities and fraternities as if no Black students or students of color are in sororities and fraternities, which is just blatantly not true. Instead of doing that, you then make the argument that students of color would be helped if we stopped enforcing plagiarism rules and if you stopped proctoring tests, so just let them do whatever they want, which is, of course, incredibly racist. It is the soft bigotry of low expectations, and it's very racist to suggest that proctoring software, if you have students monitored during remote exams, will hurt students of color. And when you argue that if we have a zero tolerance policy for plagiarism, and if you have too strict of standards of academic integrity, that it would hurt Black students and students of color. Talk about racism. That's it. Talk about things that hurt the ability of students, regardless of the color of their skin, to succeed in life post higher education. This is making their lives worse in the long run. And it is incredibly racist and incredibly insane. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We will be back on the live show tomorrow. Remember, if you have not signed up to support our show yet, please do so, especially heading into a critical election year. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. It'll just run you $5 a month.